Hello, my name is Tom Longano, and this is Boy Stories. All right, welcome back to the podcast. We are well into season three. Right now, we are reading the Green Book of Stories. I have right now a great story, one of my favorite stories from this book. It's called Albert's Piano Lessons. And I did want to say we're releasing this on the main podcast, but if you like this and you want more of the Green Book, all new episodes and new interviews, go check out our Patreon. It's $5 to subscribe for the month, and you'll have access to all the new episodes and interviews, and you can ask character questions and more. So check out the Patreon. That link's going to be in the description to this episode. I really, really appreciate all the support that you guys can give. And for now, it's one of my favorite stories from the Green Book of Stories, and I'm going to jump right into it. Here is Albert's Piano Lessons. Albert stared at the black and white keys. He placed a single finger on a white key with tape marked C. He pressed down. Then he pressed down again.
"All right," he announced, swinging his feet off the piano bench. "That's enough practice for one day."
Albert turned and came face to face with his mother, who watched him with crossed arms.
"Oh," he mumbled. "Hi. Didn't see you there."
15 minutes a day, she reminded him. That was the deal. Now, in Albert's experience of deals, limited though that experience was, they usually included two parties coming together in a mutual agreement as to terms and conditions. This supposed deal, on the other hand, had no such mutual agreement. It was announced on the way home from piano practice last week after his teacher, Mrs. Higgins, explained to his mother that, if Albert continued to not practice, further lessons would be a waste of time and money. Albert initially greeted this news with joy. Mrs. Higgins's house smelled like musty cats, and he dreaded the weekly lessons at her piano. Apparently, his strict adherence to a personal no-practice policy had paid off, for Mrs. Higgins was amazed to see her pupil had steadily gotten worse and worse each week, something she had not yet experienced in 20 years of teaching children piano. But Albert's mom was not prepared to give up so easily. She announced the new deal, 15 minutes of piano practice every day. Then, and only then, provided Albert also finishes homework and chores, was he allowed to play his cherished video games. To call this new regime torture would, of course, be a gross understatement for poor Albert, who already struggled to finish his homework and household chores without a near weekly breakdown of nerves. So now Albert's mother positioned herself behind the piano bench and watched as Albert glared at this indifferent instrument, this so-called piano, this callous machine devised for the senseless punishment of 10-year-olds by cruel minds centuries ago, when people had nothing better to do than dream up new ways to make kids' lives more miserable. Using only his pointer finger, he played a C major scale, which he knew because it was all the white keys and no black ones. Then he played it again. And again. And again. "Don't you know anything else?" his mom asked after the fifth repetition of the C major scale. "You've taken lessons for over a year."
"Miss Higgins is a subpar instructor," Albert said pointedly,
in the vague hope that his mother would give up this quest to make him learn piano, should she be convinced the teacher were inadequate.
"Oh, really?" she said, sounding unimpressed. "Then maybe we should find you a new teacher, one that could meet twice a week."
Albert immediately played a different scale, this time using all his fingers. He also added in some chords, along with a portion of The Entertainer that Mrs. Higgins had taught him three classes ago.
"That's more like it," said his mom.
As Albert played, he realized this could not go on. There must be some way out. That night at dinner, he cleared his throat.
"Mother?
Father," he announced.
"I would like to quit piano."
Albert was no stranger to the subtleties of negotiation. He knew it was best to state his position at the front, then argue back from there.
"That's ridiculous," said his mother. "You haven't given it a chance."
Albert held his line.
"I've practiced for 15 minutes straight 2 days in a row," he answered, "and I have discovered that piano is not for me."
As he said this, he gave an appealing look to his father, searching for any sign of his thoughts on this doomed piano project.
"If you give up now, Albert," his mom cut in, "you'll regret it when you're older."
"I am not older," Albert replied. and when I am, if I do regret it, I will take piano lessons with Mrs. Higgins then.
It's good to have constructive activities, his mom argued back. You need to give it an honest try to see if you like it. You have to really practice.
Father, Albert addressed his dad directly, I would like your opinion on the matter.
I think you should listen to your mother, his dad said, and quit complaining.
Albert stared at his peas and meatloaf. So his fate was sealed. The parents held their line. But his mom had left a loophole.
Let us say, he began, speaking to his peas, I give this piano a chance, then still do not care to pursue it.
He looked up.
Could I then, perhaps, be permitted to quit?
Why is he speaking so formally? His dad asked his mom.
He does this sometimes, his mom explained. He's negotiating.
Maybe I am,
Albert burst out. He did not like being talked about as if he were not at the table.
And maybe I would simply like some information as to how I might be considered to have given piano a chance. 1 week? 2 weeks?
You know that's not enough, argued his mom. You've taken piano lessons for over a year, and these last 2 days were the only times you've ever actually practiced.
Surely that is an indication that I was not made to play piano,
Albert pointed out.
I am no Mozart.
His dad raised his eyebrows, impressed that Albert knew who Mozart was.
How about this? He said, looking from Albert to his mom. You've got the basics down, so now with some practice, you'll be able to play. If you do well at Mrs. Higgins's end-of-the-year recital, then we'll talk.
Albert digested this information. Mrs. Higgins hosted an annual recital for her students and their families. Last year, he had just started lessons, so he hadn't been forced to go. Mrs. Higgins talked often of the recital as the highlight of her calendar. Two pupils were awarded medal prizes each year, one for most improved and another for best performance. She displayed both medals on top of her piano and talked of them when inspiring students to practice. Albert had never given thought to these medals or harbored even the smallest desire to obtain them.
Okay, he said slowly. How about this? If I participate in Miss Higgins's recital,
which you will, because you're her student, added his mom,
and win one of the special medals,
Albert continued,
then I will have given piano a chance.
His parents shared a look. Albert was really showing initiative here, and it was not their place to squash it. Sure, said his mom, nodding. If you win a medal, then we can say you've given piano a chance.
So then I can quit, Albert said.
His mother paused. It was clear to both parents that Albert would not win a medal. Also, if he did, then no doubt the positive stimulation of the award would catapult his piano career to new heights. For why would he quit an activity he was good at, in which he had attained even marginal success? So, for them, this was a win-win. That's a deal, Albert, said his mom with a smile. You win a medal at the recital, and, if you want, you can quit.
No more piano ever again,
Albert said at once. If that's what you want, said his mom.
Very well,
said Albert. He stood up from the table and walked to his father, holding out his hand. His dad shook. Then Albert walked to his mother, who also shook. Then he nodded and left the room. A moment later, his parents were surprised to hear a flurry of scales being played in the living room.
That's my boy, said Albert's dad with a chuckle. Just needed a bit of motivation.
We'll see how long this lasts, said Albert's mom, slightly more attuned to the vicissitudes of Albert's moods. But any skepticism she had as to the genuine nature of Albert's new fervor for piano soon vanished. Albert practiced for not only 15 minutes, but several hours each day. Both mother and father retired to other parts of the house to escape the constant barrage of scales that reverberated within the living room, now redubbed the piano room, each day. They purchased earplugs and most nights had to remind their studious pupil of the instrument that bedtime had come. Lights needed to go out. Albert would immediately stop playing, arrange his books, close the piano cover, and then walk slowly up to bed. Mrs. Higgins was nothing if not impressed by this sudden change in her student's attitude. She pulled Albert's mom aside 2 weeks later and said she was amazed by Albert's improvement. She would be accelerating his lessons. During his entire first year, Albert had remained at beginner level 1. Now, in a mere 2 weeks, he had ascended through all 5 beginner levels and was currently on intermediate level 3. Mrs. Higgins explained that she would be teaching Albert more difficult pieces, and Albert's mother nodded eagerly, both looked forward to the coming recital. Albert's resolve did not waver. Every day he completed his homework and chores without complaint, then practiced piano for 3 hours straight until dinner. During dinner, he requested a bowl of iced water to soak his hands, one each for 15 minutes, then he returned to the piano until bedtime. When asked by his father if he wanted to watch a movie, Albert would gruffly reply that there was no time. The once beloved video game console lay unused and dusty in the basement. His mother felt odd, as if a large portion of her life had abruptly left her. She no longer needed to monitor her son's homework, playtime, or anything else for that matter. She took up watercolor painting, and her friends remarked that they had never seen her so at peace. The one nagging suspicion in both parents' minds was the potential negative effect of their son's alteration. No light shone in Albert's eyes, no glee at the thought of nightly video games while he shoveled food into his mouth at dinner. Instead, he ate with studied calm and went about his daily duties with the cold, methodical attitude of a prisoner serving a long-term sentence. Albert's parents decided this must be what it was like to raise a motivated child. Moreover, Mrs. Higgins began hinting they might have a genius on their hands. Never in her years of teaching had a student progressed so rapidly. Albert made it to advanced level 5, and soon, Mrs. Higgins noted, with no small amount of pride, she would not be able to teach him anymore. This came as a shock to Albert's mom, who had not heard Albert play since the first week of his new practice routine. Earplugs were simply a part of her daily life. Mrs. Higgins warned her not to tell Albert, for he might get too excited, but a special friend of hers would be attending the recital. This friend happened to be a piano master who played Carnegie Hall regularly and recruited the best talent in the country for a special conservatory program. Albert's mother was stunned. She and her husband had long ago decided it would be the accomplishment of their lifetimes if they could see their son through high school with passing grades. Now, to think, they might have a genius in the family. They promptly invited both sets of grandparents, numerous cousins and relatives, neighbors, and Albert's classmates and teacher to the big recital. Still, unaware of these growing expectations and the buzz surrounding the recital, Albert practiced. Every night, hours at a time, he practiced. Mrs. Higgins moved the recital from the church basement, where it had been held for the last 10 years, to a small concert hall at a local community college. When the day of the performance came, there was standing room only in the back of the packed theater. Albert's parents sat in the center of the filled orchestra section, surrounded by friends and relatives. During the first portion of the recital, Mrs. Higgins' students struggled through renditions of The Entertainer and various Beatles covers as the audience coughed and clapped politely. Albert waited backstage, sweating, wearing a stiff suit and a tie that choked his neck. Everything had led to this. This was it. The penultimate student, a pimple-ridden eighth grader named Ashley, finished her performance of Fur Elise and earned the largest applause of the night. Albert glared from behind the curtain as Ashley bowed and shook Mrs. Higgins' hand. She would be hard to beat. But he had prepared, and he would not choke now.
There he is,
whispered Jeffrey, elbowing Charlie beside him.
Look, there's Albert. I know him.
Charlie hissed at Jeffrey to be quiet. They sat in the fourth row from the left, which was packed with fifth graders from Mr. L's class, and at the end of the row, Mr. L himself. When Albert stepped onto the stage, music folder tucked under one arm and squinting into the bright lights, he heard a snigger to his right, and then a loud shh that he recognized as Mr. L's signature sound. There was his class, twitching in their seats and grinning at him. The boys, who had spent the previous 45 minutes wondering why they'd been dragged there, were glad to finally see someone they recognized. Jeffrey bounced up and down in his seat and waved, trying to get Albert's attention. Albert swiveled on his heel and made for the piano bench. Did his parents' desire for his humiliation know no bounds? Why must everyone he knew be present to witness this torture? No, he would not allow such mind games to make him lose focus. He sat on the bench, wiped his hands on his pants, then breathed. Albert rolled his shoulders and his fingers rose with sudden grace to the keys. The fifth graders stopped squirming and silence took the hall. Then Albert played. He began with Chopin's Ballade No. 1 in G minor. Because of its accessible melodic structure and ease of entrance for an audience accustomed to the harsher sounds of pop rock covers. Then he progressed into a spirited rendition of the third movement of Beethoven's No. 14 Moonlight Sonata, put a personal flourish on two of Bach's BMW Goldberg variations, intended as a nod to impress the more erudite of the musical scholars in the room, then finally concluded with an effervescent and triumphant performance of Mozart's Fantasia in D minor. Sweat poured down Albert's face as his fingers flew across the keys. He barely sat as he reached along the entire grand piano, swaying with the music, emphasizing each chord with a twist of his head, eyes closed in rapture. When he came to the finale of the Fantasia, Albert was a boy no longer. The crowd watched, transfixed, as he seemed to float off the bench, a creature beyond human. The piano melded to his will in all things. It became a mere extension of his mind, and the piece took on a new form and life, as if Mozart himself had composed it with the express intention of Albert one day performing it, completing it, no, perfecting it. Albert slammed the final chord and held on, his hands trembling, his hair dripping with sweat. Then his body collapsed. Thunderous applause threatened to burst the roof off the community theater. Tears streamed down Mrs. Higgins' cheeks as she strode across the stage to congratulate Albert. His parents, his grandparents, the entire class of fifth graders, and Mr. L stood on their feet, furiously applauding, howling their praise. Never had anyone experienced such rapturous and inconceivable beauty, such majestic and ecstatic instrumental mastery, such true and total art from such an unexpected source. The only one who had some small expectation was Mrs. Higgins, but even she had never heard Albert play with such pure and primal passion. The applause lasted for a full 15 minutes. As Albert stood in his sweat-soaked suit and rumpled tie, blinking at the audience, he did not smile. So humble, so enwrapped in his art and love for music, relatives and strangers alike sang this remarkable boy's praises. The master tutor declared she would clear her schedule and fire every one of her so-called talented pupils for the opportunity to teach, no, to learn from Albert. The boy's work would surely herald a rebirth of culture, an unparalleled renaissance to change music forever. In the rush of the extended ovation after the performance, Mrs. Higgins almost forgot to award the medals. Albert tugged her jacket and reminded her, pointing at the medals on the piano. She quickly announced to all that Albert was the first student to win both Most Improved and Best Recital. "Great," said Albert as he took the medals and leaned into the microphone. "I quit." He walked off the stage to a roar of laughter. The music aficionados in the audience respected the little genius boy's macabre sense of humor. The only persons who weren't chuckling and praising the small master's wit were his parents, who stood still and cold, deathly pale. They'd suddenly remembered their deal.
"He can't be serious," said Albert's dad to his mom. "Right?"
But Albert's mother knew her son. She brushed off the congratulations of the master tutor and dodged a representative from Berklee College of Music as she left the hall. She was eager to speak with Albert, yet also dreading what he might say. The drive home was silent, in stark contrast to the loud cries of adulation that had followed them from the auditorium. Now, both parents stared straight ahead with blank expressions. Albert sat in the back seat and, for the first time in months, had a satisfied smile.
"We were so impressed with your performance," his dad said carefully. Albert grunted.
"Everyone loved it," added his mom.
Albert grunted again. Would you like to stop for ice cream?" asked his dad.
"I would like to go home," said Albert.
There was silence.
"So a nice man from Juilliard was telling me about scholarship opportunities," his mom ventured, testing the waters.
"That's nice," said Albert.
"That is, if you wanted to keep playing," she continued, examining her fingers.
Albert said nothing. "Of course he wants to keep playing. The boy's a prodigy," said Albert's dad, slapping the steering wheel and unable to stand the tension, while Albert's mom looked on in horror. "Isn't that right, Al? He'll keep playing, right?"
"I am a man of my word," said Albert simply.
Both parents felt the challenge in this statement. Albert would hold to his word, and he expected them to hold to theirs. There was no use arguing. When the car pulled into the driveway, Albert walked solemnly into the house and descended to the basement. He did not reemerge for the entire weekend. He had to make up for lost time, and neither parent dared to make him turn off the television, in hopes that maybe, when he got bored with video games, he would surely return to the instrument that had earned him so much success and admiration. Albert never touched a piano again. All right, so that was Albert's piano lessons. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Boy Stories. If you want to hear the interviews with Albert and more of season 3, as I said in the beginning of the episode, you can join us on our Patreon. Make sure to tell your friends if you're enjoying the stories. And this has been so much fun for us. We hope it is just as much fun for you. Looking forward to bringing you some more great stories sometime soon. This is Tom Longano signing off.